Members, we will call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. We are one member short of a quorum at this point, but I think, given the time, we'll let Representative David start presenting his bill, and as soon as we get one more member to show up, we will be legal and official, and then we will properly move the bill in front of us. Representative Lilly, not to put you on the spot as you're just getting here, but is that all right with you if we get started? All right, with that, we won't officially move the bill, but Representative Davids, we'll let you get started.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Well,
and Representative Davids, I'll just interrupt you. Representative Dean is here, so now we are officially legal. We will go ahead and move the bill. I'll let Representative Davids, if you want to move the bill so it's legally and properly before us, I would appreciate it.
And, Mr. Chairman, it gives me good comfort to know that with Representative Dean coming, it makes us legal. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So, members, I would first of all move House File 2380 be passed, not, can't say passed, be referred
to the referred
tax
to the committee on taxes.
Committee on taxes. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the amendment, the H2380DE2 amendment, which basically we're doing there is we're saying that when it comes to oversight and auditing, that they can use a third-party vendor. Basically is what we're doing there. It doesn't specifically name anyone, so they have some options there.
And
so I'd like to move the amendment.
Representative Davids moves the DE2 amendment. I assume that this is a get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be an amendment?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lilly, Representative Dean, anybody questions about the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The DE2 amendment has been adopted. It is now in the bill is now in the shape the author would like it to be in. With that, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. House File 2380 as amended. I'd just like to go through a few things what we're trying to do here. As you all know, Minsure has fallen short on almost every promise made 3 years ago. Over and over, public and lawmakers were told Minsure would operate off a premium tax much lower than the federal site. We were shown bold IT development plans that include the functionality required in this bill. This bill is an attempt to make Minsure deliver on the promises by forcing Minsure to make better decisions and some difficult choices, and I'll get into those a little bit later. It's a very simple concept. I'd rather have the money in the hands of families and small businesses in the pockets of Minsure. So we cut the Minsure tax in half in 2017. Then a set of series of basic operational benchmarks must be met by Minsure. If they are not met, the tax goes down to 1.5 in 2018, which was originally what we were promised 3 years ago. I remember sitting in that chair over there, and I couldn't figure out why in the bill it said you could go up to 3.5 when they said we wouldn't have to go above 1.5. Well, I guess we found out what the reason was. As we saw with the call center crisis in December, the ongoing 1095A catastrophe, Minsure has significantly regressed this year. There's no reason that people should continue to pay full price for an inferior product. The benchmarks are common sense and fit the promises made 3 years ago. Send clean and complete applications to insurers on a daily basis. Automatically processing renewals, allowing people to make account and coverage changes on their own over the internet, meeting call center industry standards, and sending 1095As by the required deadline, which by law is January 31st. And as you heard from the testimony yesterday, we're not even close to having all those out. And Ag members, you're probably getting calls from your constituents where they haven't received 1095As and they're getting penalty letters from the IRS. Representative Dean probably doesn't have a whole lot of those coming in, but farmers have to file their taxes by March 1st, and they don't have their 1095s, and they're getting letters saying they're going to be fined by the IRS at no fault to their own. And Mr. Chairman and members, that's why several weeks ago I sent a letter to the IRS saying, please don't fine Minnesotans who have done nothing wrong. I have not heard from the IRS on that one, but I am going to be following up. Minsure has already paid for the technology. Over $300 million have been sent since Governor Dayton took the first planning grant in February of 11. Now they need to make it work. Most importantly, the bill will save Minnesota families and small businesses at least $15 million on health premiums over the next 2 years. Why this bill works, Minsure's history of wasting money, planning money is well documented. The $16 million for EngagePoint Financial Management, Minsure has abandoned that software and switched back to decades-old system for billing. The $8 million disasters Paul Bunyan marketing campaign, $5 million for outreach grants, where most of the money that was given to those entities, they didn't even come close to making their goals. We Minchard been fined $500,000 for misspending federal funds. $30,000 in bonuses were paid during the first year. Some areas that I hope Minchard will consider cutting, and just as a full disclosure, Mr. Chairman, I'm also the legislative co-chair on the Minchard Oversight Committee. $7.6 million for marketing outreach grants, $7.3 million for administrative costs. 11 executives at Minchard make over $100,000 a year. They're spending $2.6 million for manual operations, $600,000 for a sister resource center. That's over $18 million on items that have nothing to do with building a functional website. Minchard can live without some of that, but our constituents can't live with skyrocketing premiums. So that's what the bill does. I appreciate your support. If you have any questions, we can certainly take care of that. Since this is a tax issue, that's why the motion to go to tax committee.
So thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Davids. So I understand it's going to taxes next. Is it then going to be scheduled to go to HHS? Because I would think that this would apply to them as well.
Representative Davids, you can answer that in a minute, but I'm not aware. I haven't heard that the chair of, I guess that'd be Chair Dean, has looked for it. You could suggest that to him, and I don't know if that was part of the plan anyhow. Was it yesterday? Earlier this week, I think that they had something on Minchard. He might be interested in it, but that's a good question. Representative Davids, do you have any insight?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Dean, for that question. I was thinking that this is mainly tax, but maybe I should change my motion to go to HHS. I'd be happy to do that, or we could go to tax, and then if the chair, whatever you'd like, if the chairman, Dean, wants it, I'll certainly give it to him.
Well, why don't Why don't we do this? I will check with Representative Dean and see if he wants to see it. I'll let you know. I'll mention it next week at our committee, but I'll come and find you tomorrow on the floor. I'll ask Representative Dean, and we can send it at least for now to taxes. If he wants to see it, we could either re-refer it, or do you want to hear it in taxes last? Is that what you're... Well, how about if we'll figure it out, and we'll let you guys know? Is that fair?
Mr. Chairman, why don't we have our people talk to Representative Dean's people, and we'll get it figured out. And I'm not trying to not go to HHS. I love to go to HHS. I'm just so thankful I'm not on the committee.
It's nice to visit. Wouldn't want to live there.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Dean.
Thank you. So my other question would be, is there a Senate companion on this at this point in time?
The Senate companion has been given to, I think Senator Benson. I don't think it's been introduced yet, but I think she just got it. So,
anything?
Yeah, there will be a Senate file. Yes.
Other questions, members? Seeing none, is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Seeing none. With that, any final comments, questions?
No, I just appreciate your support, and I think Representative Dean brings up a good point. If there's provisions that the chair of HHS needs to see, I'll certainly have no problem getting it over there.
And we will follow up and get back to you and make sure that it goes there if that's what the chair would like.
Chairman, I would say that I always make sure, I always want to go by the House rules completely and totally whenever possible.
Well, I guess you can't say fairer than that, Representative Davids. With that, Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 2380, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Davids and members. It is
on
the way to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Loon, you're up next. While Representative Loon is on her way up, we have a quorum now, so we did not approve the minutes before. Has anybody had a chance to pour over the minutes in minute detail? Representative Dean.
I was going to say, I move the minutes from March 15th.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Dean moves the minutes from yesterday's meeting from March 15th. Members, any comments, questions, concerns, corrections? Seeing none, those in favor of Representative Dean's motion to approve the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dean and Representative Davids. The motion is approved. The minutes are approved. And one other thing we'd like to do before he gets away, Mr. Gilardi, would you stand up for a moment, please? I have an intern. The intern is Billy Gilardi, and he goes to a really, really fine institution of higher learning located in central Minnesota, St. John's. Oh, good guess, everybody. So welcome to the committee. It's nice to have you here. And
Mr. Chair.
Everybody say...
Mr. Chair, the name sounds familiar from that region, too. Is there another connection from there?
No, there are a lot of guys named Billy up there. It's a good Christian Catholic thing. So, welcome, and if we could give a quick round of applause for these And with that, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 2954.
And I see that we have an amendment to that. Is that a get the bill in the shape the author would like an amendment?
It is, Mr. Chair. It should be in the packets. It's the A1 amendment.
That is correct. At least that's what I see. If you want to move that amendment, do we want anybody have any questions or comments about the amendment? Seeing none,
we'll I would move the A1 amendment. Mr.
Representative Loon moves the A1 amendment. Those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Loon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will be very brief. House File 2954 relates to the sale of automobiles here in Minnesota and a situation that's arisen between the manufacturers and the auto dealers. As international markets have been become more interested in some luxury brands and other types of automobiles, there's become an incidence where some people are buying these cars here in the U.S. and then shipping them over and reselling them at less than the price that they're offered in those other countries from auto dealers here. And it's created a situation between auto dealers and the manufacturers. I want to emphasize that this practice is actually not illegal, but obviously we understand the concerns that the practice provides between not only our manufacturers, but also the dealers that have been sort of caught in this situation. So the bill kind of sets out some guidelines for how dealers will be treated in that situation, and I think it's one that kind of addresses it fairly and with the interests of the manufacturers and the auto dealers in mind. And so with that, I will say that this the legislation that I bring to you today has been considered and passed in very similar form in 24 other states, including Wisconsin. So we are seeing this effort happening. The amendment that we just adopted to this also addresses some concerns that were brought, I believe, by the manufacturers. And I want to just say briefly that I did receive a letter last night from a group representing motorcyclists or motorcycle manufacturers, and they specifically referenced the clear and convincing evidence standard that was in the original bill. The amendment did take that out, so I just wanted to make that clear that I think from my read of their letter that issue has been addressed. So with that, I will let Amber Backus provide us with all the finer points of the legislation today.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and start whenever you're ready.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and 363 new truck and car franchise dealers in the state of Minnesota. And we do appreciate Representative Loon bringing this bill forward, as well as the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers for working with us and getting peace in the valley. 5 cents to Representative Davis, right? but as automobile manufacturers are now selling their vehicles around the world, as you heard from Representative Loon, and in some countries they are pricing the vehicles at 2 to 4 times what the identical vehicle sells for in the United States. This has created a secondary market where consumers in those countries are looking to brokers in the United States to buy a vehicle in the States for them and ship it to them for considerable savings. Obviously, this disrupts the carmakers' overseas markets, who would like to see a crackdown on this flow of vehicles from the U.S. to overseas customers. As a result, the manufacturers are asking dealers to police their customers to prevent sales to customers who will resell a vehicle for export. Our Minnesota dealers don't have a problem with trying to keep a sale local and in this market, as they prefer to have a customer for the life of the vehicle. However, our dealers do have a problem with facing stiff penalties and even the potential for termination of their franchises if they sell a vehicle to a qualified customer who ends up exporting a vehicle overseas, which is what the car makers are threatening if vehicles we sell end up registered in another country after leaving our lots. Our dealers are willing to do their due diligence to prevent sales that would lead to immediate exports, like checking the list manufacturers provide of known exporters and flagging customers whose credit applications don't align with the high-dollar vehicles they plan to purchase. But they won't stand for punitive measures by the carmakers that will take dollars out of their businesses for actions of their customers over which they have no control. They do not relish being the cops of their customers and spending time scrutinizing transactions that could cost them thousands of dollars in penalties and the potential loss of future businesses because of a customer's legal actions. For that reason, we ask you to support House File 2594 and prohibit carmakers from taking punitive action against Minnesota dealers like chargebacks or withholding vehicles and future allocations when they are following the carmaker's protocol and trying to do right by them and their customers. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you. Very nice. Members, any questions? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is either for the bill author or the testifier. So is there a time frame on this? Say I bought a luxury vehicle in 5 years from now, I decided I wanted to get a new car, and I was going to get more money for my car overseas. I mean, how does that sort of play out in, I guess if I'm driving a luxury car, it would be 3 years later getting a new car. So my question, thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Dean. Export agreements vary by manufacturer, but typically if it's something ends up overseas, around 120 days to 6 months is the time frame they're looking for, where if a car doesn't up there, that could be in violation. But that being said, it's not illegal for a customer to purchase a vehicle and then resell it overseas. It would just be a violation of the agreement between the manufacturer and the dealer.
Thank you, Ms. Banks. Representative Dean, does that cover it?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just follow up then. No, I'm good.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Lilly, and then Johnson, and then we're just working our way down the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm just trying to put my mind around it. I think it's a great idea and support it generally. Just can you explain to me how it would work? You know, like I think like Volvo and some of the European makes, you can fly over and they'll offer airfare, and you go over and you pick up a Volvo or a BMW or something and then drive it around for a while and then you fly it home. Would that limit someone coming over here and buying a Corvette or something and driving it around the U.S. and then shipping it back?
Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, that is a good question. I think, again, if it were to be exported within that time frame, that could be in violation of the agreement between the manufacturer and the dealer. But, again, it gets tricky because there isn't a violation of used cars going over. So if they put a lot of miles on in that time frame, maybe that, again, would be outside the limits of these agreements and it wouldn't matter.
Representative Lilly, I don't know. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just trying to figure this out, so if it's a dumb question, let me know, I guess. Why do we care if there is a secondary market for this particular matter? I mean, why is it a problem that if they're overpricing them somewhere else and then someone's coming over to buy it to sell at a more reasonable price, what's the issue?
Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I don't want to necessarily speak on behalf of the manufacturers, but I understand it. They're trying to do their planning and do allocations around the world with the vehicles, so putting so many overseas that aren't moving and are coming from here and moving there disrupt how they distribute those across the markets, as well as maybe some countries might have different environmental or safety standards that the vehicles here wouldn't comply with, but I don't think that's necessarily the case in these markets like Russia, which doesn't have the strongest regulations in place. But Ms. Nieren might be able to answer that.
Representative Johnson, that was such a good question. We're bringing in an extra witness here.
Welcome to
the committee.
Mr. Chair, Member Sandy Nieren on behalf of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. And I do want to thank the dealers and Representative Loon for their kindness in sharing this bill with us so we could work out a compromise before session even started. The answer to your question is in many of these cases, these foreign governments impose different tariffs and fees in addition to the sales of this car. So we are putting a lot of the manufacturers are having uncomfortable situations with some of these foreign governments when they see these cars coming in to avoid all those regulations, fees, and tariffs that they have in that country. And she did mention environmental factors that does play in some places, but it's mainly the money, and that's usually what causes the problem.
Thank you, Ms. Aaron. Yeah. Representative Johnson, you're good. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just don't know if this is a battle that we have to fight for the car dealers or get involved with at all, so I'm kind of hesitant that way. But I do have some questions. You keep using the word overseas. But the text of the bill says a foreign country. What worries me is how it might affect families up in the Canadian border area. That's where I come from, and there's lots of exchanges back and forth that could be affected by this. Has any thought been given to the families across the Rainy River or the Rio Grande?
Representative Sundin, I knew you had a big district, but I didn't know you went to the Rio Grande.
Ah.
That's impressive.
Si.
Muy bien. Good question, Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin, currently the market where these vehicles are going that's becoming the issue where our dealers are facing penalties is really predominantly China and Russia and a little bit of Brazil. I do know, I think there was a time maybe when the exchange rate between Canada and the U.S. was a little different, and so there were some vehicles going over there, and I think technically that might have been in violation, but I don't think the manufacturers were enforcing these penalties then as they are now.
Representative Sundin, does that give you a little more comfort?
I just want to, Mr. Chairman, I just want to do things legally, and I don't want my brother-in-law coming over from Fort Francis and beating me up, you know. So,
well, none of us are in favor of that. This is when things went awry. Well, Representative Sundin, this bill is going to go to civil law after this. Maybe we can get a little more clarification on it. And I would remind everybody next Monday night is Canada Day at the James J. Hill House. Maybe we could get this worked out over a couple of labats. International relations, that's what we do here in the Commerce Committee. Other questions, members? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not 100% sure why I'm asking this question, but I'm going to ask it anyhow. I know some of you would appreciate that. Why are we taking this up on the state level, and it seems to have interstate commerce connected to it because the manufacturers sell in different areas? Is it because the dealerships are at the state level? And why is this not covered, as we had heard from previous testifier, with tariffs regulations and others? Why is this not being handled at the federal government level, and each state has to kind of fend for themselves on it?
Ms. Backus?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll. The states are the ones that regulate motor vehicle franchise protection agreements, and that's what Chapter 80E is. And the only change we're making is prohibiting conduct by the manufacturers or against the dealers here in Minnesota. We aren't getting involved in the discussions about tariffs and those sort of things. I could tell you that the feds initially were pursuing lawsuits against some of these brokers who had big operations going nationally, and the only violation of federal law they were coming up with in those was when there was misrepresentation in documents to purchase the vehicles or the money came from illegitimate resources. But as far as this phenomenon of straw buyers purchasing a vehicle, there's nothing illegal about that if they are providing the correct documents and the money's coming from legitimate sources. But it really gets down to that the state regulates the motor vehicle franchise protection laws.
Representative Driscoll, you're good. Members, any other questions? Is there anyone else in the crowd that wants to speak for or against this bill? I have one question if no one else is coming on. So a question about the organization. Is Lenzen Chevrolet and Buick in downtown Chaska a member of this organization?
Yes, they are. All of Minnesota's new car and truck dealers are members.
Thank you. I was just checking about Lenzen Chevrolet in particular. See, nobody else? Any other questions? Okay. You win the good comment of the day, Representative Lilly. He said, is this a vehicle bill? Come on, it was better than that. Give him a hand. That was good. Representative Loon, we'll give you the last comment here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the questions from members and the fact that I'm sure Ms. Backus and her very great diligence and representation will get answers to some of those questions if we need more information as we travel on to civil law. So I appreciate your members' consideration.
Thank you. Good questions, members. And with that, Representative Loon renews her motion that House File 2954, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Loon. Thank you, Ms. Backus, Ms. Naren. With that, Mr. Elwood and Representative Smith, if you want to come down. No pressure. Last bill of the day. We were told we'll be done by 3:15. Glad somebody was paying attention. Representative Smith, if you'd like to go ahead and move the bill so it's in front of us.
So moved.
Representative Smith moves House File 2641, and I see that we also have a DE1 amendment. I assume that is getting the bill in the shape that you and Mr. Elwood would like it to be in.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Representative Smith moves the DE1 amendment. Seeing no discussion on the get the bill in the shape amendment, those in favor of the adoption of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those approved or those opposed, same sign. Seeing none, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The bill is in the shape that the author would like. With that, Representative Smith, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 2641 deals with the debt settlement law enacted in 2009. It closes a loophole allowing tax debt settlement providers to operate differently under rules other than the credit card and medical debt settlement providers. I have some testimony for some additional detail from Mr. Elwood, please.
Thank you. Mr. Elwood, welcome back to the committee. Please tell us what you know. Not all of what you know, just pertaining to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I was going to say that would be a very short testimony. But, in 2009, this committee and this legislature passed a bill to set some rules of the road for debt settlement companies. And what that bill did was to allow these services to be provided here in Minnesota to help debtors settle their debts with credit card companies, medical debts and all that. And that's been operating very well for all that time. Recently, you've probably seen on late night TV the ads that say, do you owe money on your back taxes? Well, call us and we'll negotiate for you and settle that for 50 cents on the dollar or whatever, what have you. We at Legal Aid have been receiving upsurge in complaints from consumers who have been scammed by some of these folks, similar to what happened several years ago. And we discovered that it wasn't contemplated back then that tax debt would be treated similarly as credit card or medical debt. So this bill simply says that if you're, you know, quack like a duck and walk like a duck, you're a duck. And so if you do tax debt settlement, which is the same thing as settling a credit card or a medical debt, you should operate under the same rules. And so what this bill does technically is two things. It changes the definition or adds the definition of creditor to include a government entity, and it changes the definition and adds to the definition of what debt settlement services are to include settling a tax debt. And that's essentially what it does. There's one other provision that I'd call your attention to, and that is that it also provides that if any action, legal action, is taken by a creditor or a debtor, that action has to take place here in Minnesota court. And happy to stand for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Representative Davids has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I might consider taking on a Smith bill, but if it's supported by Elwood, I'm very nervous about doing that, so I think I won't. But I do have a question for Mr. Elwood. with the changes you're making in Section 4, and not that I take on a Smith bill, I don't like losing. So, but in Section 4, we're expanding the definition of debt service, debt services. Is there any change in the exemptions for CPAs or attorneys in the new language? Is that intended to also be covered by the exemptions in number one? In other words, are we still leaving the CPAs and the attorneys out? I really don't want to bring them in because they're licensed separately and they do their own thing. So what are your thoughts on that, Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, the underlying exemptions in the chapter remain exactly the same. This does not change that one iota.
So then, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Elwood, this would not bring CPAs and attorneys in for the regulation of debt collectors. I mean, I really like what you're doing here. I just kind of think that they should be doing their own thing.
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, they were exempt in 2009. They're still exempt under this. It doesn't bring anybody else in that wasn't in before.
Okay. And Mr. Elwood, thank you for your work on this. And Representative Smith, this is something we need to do. So,
any other questions from members? Anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? With that, Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair, one more thing. I'd just like to thank Representative Johnson, who co-sponsored this bill. I failed to do that at the beginning.
Well, Mr. Elwood, I was going to say from the chair, I appreciate your efforts on this and your willingness to work with everybody on all sides. And, you know, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat author, I think, you know, your heart is in the right place and you do good work. So thank you very much. And with that, Representative Smith, do you want the final word?
Mr. Chair, members, I ask for your support. Thank you.
Representative Smith asks for our support. In Human News, his motion that House File 2641, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is on its way. Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Thank you, Representative Smith. Thank you, members. Thank you, everybody. With that, I think we are all done for the day, and we are adjourned.